clear of the closing doors, please.
Welcome to Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I am your host. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us on SST, on Apple Podcasts, App, Spotify, and on YouTube. Don't forget, you could also watch the podcast on Spotify if you're into that sort of thing. If you want to see our still tied for first place leader in the clubhouse for the Subway Sports Talks picks, beautiful face, why he talks and waxes poetically about the NFL playoffs, Cody O'Connor. You have to see it on YouTube or in the Spotify app. Cody, what's going on, bro?
It's 18 weeks, Pete, and we are at a stalemate here. And up until our little pre-conversation, I thought that was it. I thought it was like a whole new thing going into the playoffs, new records or something. So I assumed we were tied. We've got a chance to break that tie break. And who knows? Mark Shenlugan could get hot in the playoffs and overtake both of us as the outright winner. So a lot of football left through 18 weeks. Above 500 is something to be proud of. Hopefully we can keep that rolling, get some winners in the playoffs, man.
Yeah, and we are still above 500 as a unit, though it's getting a little bit tight, a little bit frisky here. I really do pride ourselves on hopefully the whole group, all four of us, me, you, Mark, and Pat, staying above 500 for the entirety of the NFL season and the playoffs. It would be a fantastic accomplishment by us, and we're above 500. I actually don't have the full record off the top of my head. I believe Mark went 2-1. Pat went 2-1.
I was 1-2 and you were 1-2.
Yeah, we had the mediocre week 18s, which again, we talked about week 18, and we'll get into the playoff stuff real quick, but we talked about week 18 as one of those weeks that you don't really want to go all in on because you just don't know who's going to care, which team that's out of it's going to put up together a crazy performance or not. And basically it's a crapshoot, right? You don't know which team's really going to send it. Like, who knew Carson Wentz was going to rush the ball 20 times basically in that game against the Niners? It's stuff you just can't predict. And Cody, I see you nodding over there. Did Paco 2-1?
2-1 for Patty B.
Beautiful. So that leaves us at six games above 500 as still, I believe. So that's 110, 104, and 2, I believe, is our record now through 18 weeks. So above 500, great stuff by us. And we have more picks coming on for the playoffs. But that's not what we're here to do today. We're here to talk about all sorts of things about the playoffs. Maybe you'll hear some leans and some ideas for our picks. But that's not just what we'll be doing, is making picks today. We're breaking it down. We're giving you the thoughts. We're giving you the storylines that we think are most interesting throughout the rest of the playoffs. We're going to do it through a fun game of buy or sell, where I hit Cody with some burning hot takes, perhaps, and he tells me if they're true or false. But before we get to that, Cody, we do have to at least comment on one thing. As we were discussing, we were going to talk about on the podcast how we didn't want to go into the coaching carousel thing because it feels like you're chasing, you're on a wild goose chase, right? Oh, let's talk about the opening in Los Angeles for the Chargers. And then boom, by the time this podcast comes out, there's a coach in place and you're like, whatever. So we're not doing all that, but the New York Giants have some interesting stuff going on here between Brian Daboll and Wink Martindale and his guys that he had on staff. And this is a relationship that's been a little bit tenuous throughout the season. So Cody, what's your read here as Wink stormed off on Brian Daboll and, you know, was pissed that two of his lead assistants got fired?
It's been weird. I mean, there's no way around it, that it's just strange. Especially because the first report was that Wink was coming back. And then the couple hours later, you hear that that relationship seems to be broken. And like you said, Wink stormed out and they have no way of contacting him. He's apparently in Florida and untrackable right now, which, again, it's just adding to the weirdness. And my initial thought was, here we go. Like, this organization, again, with the dysfunction, with the weirdness, with the craziness, like, why has this continued to follow this New York Giants team? And then the more you hear about it, because my initial thought was, oh, great. Like, Daboll doesn't have the locker room. He doesn't have Wink. Like, and I'm like, oh man, like, are we at a bigger problem than I had initially thought? And the more that comes out, the more it feels like Wink is a little bit of an egomaniac and perhaps a little dramatic. So what happened was that, at least the story goes, that Daboll fired one of Wink's, or two of Wink's right-hand men, the guys that came with him from Baltimore. They'd apparently been with him since 2012, this, that, and the third. And at least one of them was the outside linebackers coach, Well, if you think about what the Giants defensive unit struggled at, it was probably at most their defensive, their outside linebackers rather, right? They had a really good interior rush. Yes, Kayvon Thibodeau still got the sack numbers, but Aziz Ojulari's numbers were down. His win rate was down. And I think a lot of Giants fans were wondering why Kayvon wasn't used in pass rushing even more. Inside linebackers were great. The DBs were actually pretty good. Deontay Banks developed really well. So if you're wondering what the issue was defensively, that was probably one of them. And yeah, okay, that's Wink's right-hand man. I get that. That's tough. But this is a job. This is a business. And don't forget that Brian Daboll fired the offensive line coach who wasn't getting it done, who was one of his guys from Buffalo. So why is it okay that Daboll fires one of his guys, but if it's Wink's guy, all of a sudden it's a big thing? So more and more, it's starting to seem like Daboll is right. It feels like maybe Wink was the guy that leaked some of that information to Glazer, who reported the riff in the locker room 5-6 weeks back, whenever that was. And so the more it seems like maybe John Harbaugh was onto something getting rid of Wink, and maybe the Giants are going to be better off despite the fact that their defense put up good numbers. And initially, again, my thought was, what the hell? This guy makes the Giants better. Why can't we mend this relationship? It feels like Wink just didn't want it to be mended. And you see more about him going over Daboll's head and just weird things like that. So you don't know what's going to come of it, who's going to be the new DC. You could all but guarantee that Wink is out whenever that report ends up becoming official. But weird is probably the best way I could describe it, because I can't remember a situation really happening like this. But it's just frustrating because it's still more talking points and more distraction for an organization that just doesn't need that.
You brought up a bunch of great points. The Harbaugh thing I was going to get to as well. Wink was there for a long time. He was successful there for a very long time, even when there was injuries and the roster didn't seem like it would be a top defense. The Ravens always had a more than respectable defense, and large in part due to Wink, his aggressiveness, his nature, and et cetera. Clearly, there's been something that's been wrong here, and I have to think about this, Cody. Football is the main sport that, you know, at least that's pop, I assume, that I could, let's just say this, that I can think of on top of my head, outside of maybe a pitching staff versus a hitting coach, but that doesn't really seem like it has as much contrast. Like, there's still more togetherness with that than there is this. Offensive coaches versus defensive coaches in football, in this sport, more than any other sport in the world, butt heads all the time. No matter what level you are, from high school to the pros, you're going to have defensive coaching staffs and offensive coaching staffs, offensive players, defensive players, busting heads all the time because they compete hard against one another. And when they feel like one side is doing more than the other side, you know they're going to let you hear it at a certain point. And I don't think that Wink from day one is saying, yo, my defense is doing its job, get your offense in order. But after 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 14 weeks, 18 weeks, and now all these graphics from week 5 to week 18, the Giants causing more turnovers in the NFL than any other team in the league. You don't think Wink is holding that a little bit close to his chest when the offense is clearly the weakness that's holding back this team? And now all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to give me shit for doing this and doing that and being a little bit bombastic. Get your offense in order, Brian, right? Like, that's what my first thought was as well. Wink seems like the type of guy who is that prideful defensive coach who's going to say, yo, you're going to fire my guys when my defense was very good this year? Your offense was one of the worst in the league? Okay, I see what this is all about now, right? And so I don't want to say that Wink was blameless here, but I do want to say that I don't think he's completely off base, because the Brian Daboll that we saw in year one, he did a lot with a little with that offense. And maybe you can't expect coaches to do that with offensive and with bad quarterback play on the offensive side over and over again, but this offense took a step back. There wasn't as much creativity. There was not near as much efficiency and explosiveness with this offense. There were splashes, there were moments, but there was no such thing as consistency for this offense. So I have to imagine that Wink got fed up with hearing crap, with catching shit from Daboll when his defense was playing well and the offense is one of the worst in the league.
I mean, there's no argument, at least from me, that Wink Martindale is a very good defensive coordinator, a very capable one, and one, again, that initially I wanted to stay.
Right.
But here's a little counter. Last year, the Giants made the playoffs, went into Minnesota, and had to play a damn near perfect offensive game for them to be able to win that game. That wasn't Wink Martindale's defense that got them that playoff win. That was Brian Daboll's offense. This year, Daboll and the offense, or rather the offense in general, was the side of the ball that was so injured. Is that a full excuse? No. Teams deal with injury. I get all that. But the injuries really hit hard on the offensive side of the ball. Andrew Thomas, Wandale Robinson didn't start out healthy. Saquon Barkley got hurt. Obviously, Daniel Jones gets injured. The revolving door known as that offensive line. So, again, I'm not excusing Brian Daboll and this offense for being so stagnant and so poor for such a large part of the year. But they got smoked by injuries as an already under-talented unit. So there's at least that part of things. And I don't understand where Wink gets off, because it was just 1 year removed from a successful season where the offense was humming at least late and the defense got stomped. They got beat up by Minnesota and the offense covered their ass. And then the Eagles went up and down the field all day long. Again, it's not like the offense was great either, but there was a heck of a lot of blame to go around. So again, it feels to me like Wink is very egotistical, and I get it. You probably don't get to that point in your life and your career without having some of that ego, and that's fine and dandy, but you also have to be able to collaborate. And it seems like Brian Daboll is the type of guy, all the reports I see is how collaborative he is, how often he's in different defensive meetings, special teams meetings, offensive meetings, of course. He's everywhere. He's the head coach. He's the guy. And it feels like Wink was kind of undermining him. And again, if that report that came out to Glazer was because Wink leaked it, then good riddance. If that's the case, good riddance. Again, I don't know that for sure, but if you were a leak in an organization and Daboll is a no-nonsense, I want everything in-house type of guy, bye, Wink. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Again, if that's the case.
Yeah, and you have to start thinking, like, what are these two? Because there's two people. They have the same last name, so I'm curious if they're brothers. I really don't know. The two assistant coaches who got fired from Wink's staff, you know, I'm pretty sure they're brothers. They both get fired. You have to think, right? Like, what is being said behind closed doors about the offense? Because you know how this stuff goes. Just like, you know, I'm sure on all the years where the Mets pitchers were fantastic and they couldn't score any runs, you best believe that some of those pitchers were in pitchers meetings or working out with just pitchers in the weight room saying, God damn it, man, we need some freaking runs. Like, what's up with our guys? Like, they suck right now, right? In football, it's that. With way more aggression and facing each other in practice, being aggressive, being assertive, trying to be dominant. And you're saying, yo, our offense sucks, dude. We're never going to win. We put up all these crooked numbers all the time and we still suck. Like, it's the same thing that's happened with the Jets, right? That Jets defense got sick and tired of having to give up 3 points or less to win games. Like, right? There's going to be that point, but that doesn't make it okay. That doesn't make it that you should be talking smack about your offense in these meetings. And if it gets back to Daboll, he definitely has that right to put his foot down and say, I don't want you in my organization, right? So I'm with you as much as I'm countering, but I think that there has to be more to the story that at least makes some sort of sense from Wink's standpoint. Because otherwise, performance-wise, they're pretty good defense, right? They're pretty good this year, kept them in the games about as much as they could. So I don't know if you have any more to add on the Giants front.
Nope.
Anything on the Jets front for that matter before we get into our playoff talk?
No, Robert Saleh is going to be back. The regime is going to be back. And I'm just assuming that they're thinking with Aaron Rodgers, this thing looks completely different. Zach Wilson's probably gone. But I'll tell you one thing I can almost guarantee you about the Jets fan base is they're not going to get their hopes up again. They did it one too many times. I'm saying this as a Mets fan.
Just wait.
There's going to be some, of course, but there will be plenty who are like, I can't, I'll hope and I'll be quiet about it and it'll be a cautious optimism, but I can't be all the way in the way I was this year. That's at least how I'd see it. And that is just from years of getting beaten up as a Mets fan. You know, I know the feeling. So,
and we've been going through it as Giants fans. But then, yeah. You know, the Jets trade for Devontae Adams. They draft another offensive lineman.
They'll have reason, right? They'll have every reason to go back. You know what I mean? And, but that's where I say cautious optimism is the word need to use. You can't set yourself up for more disaster because that's just some of these organizations. And again, we root for them. It's just somehow it feels cursed. And I mean, geez, three plays in with Rodgers, it's like, how are we anything but a cursed organization?
Unbelievable. And Garrett Wilson apparently aired some of his grievances with the Jets organization and coaching staff after the season ended, which he has the right to do so because he said this is one of the worst years of his life. And I get it. Yeah, listen, it must have been brutal for him.
Many Jets
fans. One of the best receivers in the NFL just was unable to flex that ability just ever, really. Like, not nearly often enough for him, for how talented he is at this point in his career. But that's a conversation for the offseason, which, yeah, the Giants and Jets are in the offseason, but we are not yet, Cody. We're in playoff form, which brings us to our main segment of the day where we're going to talk about the NFL playoffs, some of the storylines, some of the players and matchups and all that fun stuff, not just for the wild card weekend, but for the entirety of the playoffs, some predictions and some exciting conversations with these just phenomenal storylines that people have been making jokes about. The NFL writers cooking up all the best possible matchups you can get, which makes me a little bit skeptical that now some of these round two matchups that you might hope for, we might just not get them, right? So I don't know. We got all these great matchups in week one of the playoffs. And we'll see what happens now moving forward. But right now, Cody, quick ground rules. I'm going to say a statement. You're going to buy or sell it. You're going to tell me true or false. You're going to give me your thoughts on it, whatever you want. Sometimes I'll just ask you a question. You'll pick your best answer, and we'll just go from there. We're going to hit on basically every game for the most part, and then obviously some larger, big picture playoff stuff as well. So any questions before we get started?
You're the man with the questions. Let's do it.
We're the man with the questions, and I'm going to – wait, no. I'm the man with the questions. You're the man with the answers. There we go. Hopefully. And it's a tough place to start because, like we said, there are so many good matchups here. Just to quickly run through some of this stuff, you have the Browns and the Texans with the whole Watson situation. He's not even playing. The Flacco comeback story, amazing stuff. Dolphins, Chiefs, that's exciting just kind of by itself because you got the Chiefs, you got the exciting Dolphins who are going to be playing in very cold temperatures in Kansas City on Saturday. Steelers and Bills, whatever. Yeah. Packers, Cowboys, McCarthy, back against the Packers, Jordan Love, rookie quarterback, first-year starter in the playoffs, Dak trying to get off the playoff hump or over the playoff hump, Matt Stafford and the Rams in Detroit to take on the Lions and Jared Goff. Couldn't write that one up better as that's their first playoff game in over 30 years. Yeah, over 30 years. And then Eagles and Buccaneers. Okay, so first question for you, Cody. I'm going to go with this one first. Who is more likely to get over their playoff hump? Is it Lamar Jackson or is it Dak Prescott? That's the first question for you.
Well, Dak's got the opening game, right? Lamar's got the bye week, so he's not going to play right away. But I think it's Lamar, and I just think he is the MVP of the league. We've been saying it for a couple weeks. He's obviously going to win it, and very, very deserving in my eyes, even if the numbers aren't previous years numbers for Lamar. Just watching him, and just if you bet against him or root against him, say your team is playing him, how infuriating he is as he's back in the pocket and just so calm. And then next thing, drop of a – he just on a dime just shifts ever so slightly to get into space, and he seems impossible to stop, to take down. And now his arm, he's been so accurate, and his receivers aren't even fantastic, and Mark Andrews hasn't even been there, and they just don't miss a step. You remember J.K. Dobbins? He was supposed to be on this team. Haven't missed a step with this group. Gus Edwards comes in, fills in seamlessly, Justice Hill, because Lamar is that guy. So – simply, my answer is Lamar Jackson, I think, is more likely than Dak to overcome those playoff woes, to get one, two playoff wins, I think, is what gets the monkey off the back. Probably has to go to the Super Bowl just because they're the one seed. You know, it's a couple years running now with Lamar. I think for people to really bypass that, he probably has to go to the Super Bowl or at least have a really good conference championship game. And if, you know, he loses in all that fashion, but yeah, it's Lamar. He's been the best quarterback in the league this year, the best player in the league, and that's why he's the MVP, and he has to prove it and continue it in the playoffs. And for my money, I think he does.
And that is probably the exact bar that people are going to be looking at. Two wins for both of the quarterbacks, right? Because if Dak Prescott makes it to the NFC Championship game and puts up a good fight against the Niners, say, or I don't know how the – I guess it depends on who wins when they reseed everything – is probably equal to Lamar getting to the Super Bowl and coming up short. That's probably equal just because of Lamar having the bye and Dak having to play the extra game to get there. So I do agree with that setup there. However, my mistake is if we're playing buy or sell, I should have probably set this question up a little better. I should have said, Lamar Jackson is more likely to get over the playoff hump than Dak Prescott, and then you could have bought that or sold it. But hey, we work out the kinks around here, and we'll get better moving forward with our questions. On the Lamar Jackson front, though, I'll say this. His playoff resume to this point is smaller than Dak Prescott's. And I don't know if that helps him or hurts him. I think it helps him, even though people seem to think they're kind of equals in that regard, right? Like they both have this massive, long resume of disappointing playoff performances. Lamar has played, what, 5 playoff games in his career? 4 playoff games in his career?
It's a low number, yeah. 4 or 5 sounds right to me.
He's been hurt at playoff time once or
last
twice.
Last year he was hurt, yep.
Yeah, he did win a game once in the playoffs, in his first year in the playoffs. He was hurt another time before that. So it's not like he's lost 8 years in a row in the playoffs, right? So I don't even think it's entirely fair to have this conversation yet, but that is exactly what we do in this league, talking about the NFL, and Dax obviously had a few more appearances in the playoffs and come up short. However,
Lamar's 1-3 in his playoff career, so games.
So he's played 4 games. Right, got it. So he made it once, won one game, lost, and then lost twice.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. So now, with me agreeing with you that I think Lamar's more likely to get over the hump, I actually think there's a chance both of these players make it over the hump this year. The Cowboys, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know, they've been really good all year. I've been on them all year. I looked back to our power rankings in week 11. I had them ranked number 5, and they basically either stayed exactly right there or even trickled up a little bit since that point in time. They've been playing pretty good football. CeeDee Lamb and that whole connection that they got going right now is incredible. Pollard's second half of his season has been a whole lot better. I think it's probably a little bit iffy occasionally for their defense lately. Like it hasn't been as, you know, bombs away, we are coming at your throat and just killing your quarterback all game long. But I believe the Cowboys have a fantastic chance to make noise here. And they have probably the best chance to stand up to the Niners in the NFC. So I think, you know, even though I would pick Lamar to get over the hump more than Dak, I'm not saying Dak doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, and I mean, they're going to go in as 7.5-point home favorites. They're going to get they're getting 2 guaranteed playoff games at home if they win, obviously. And the Cowboys have thrived and rolled at home. So it's set up for them. But I've seen this story one too many times to be confident in backing Dallas. Different team, get it. Very talented, get it. They are always, seemingly, this team, super talented. This year's different. But why is this one different, you know? So it's just hard to jump on a bandwagon of a team that I've seen have not epic collapses or meltdowns, but they just haven't gotten it done in that moment. And they've always been talented enough to do it. And I always seem to fall for the trap. And it'll probably be the year that I don't fall for the trap, that they go on a nice little run. So,
yeah, and you know, we know this in the playoffs, these things do not usually go to chalk. Right, there's going to be at least 1, maybe 2, probably 2 upsets on Saturday and Sunday, and I guess Monday, because there's a freaking playoff game on Monday. It's kind of annoying. But in this weekend, there'll probably be at least 2 upsets. And I'm not talking about like, oh, it's a 1.5-point spread. We're talking about at least like 2.5, 3 points, which every game is at least at that point. Actually, since the Texans-Brown line has moved a little bit, every single game right now, according to DraftKings, is at minimum a 3-point mm-hmm. spread. So there's going to be at least 2 upsets here, and I think there's some people who think they know who those upsets might be. But, like, end of the day, the Packers beat the Cowboys. Are we going to sit here with our jaws on the floor, Cody? No, because it's exactly what you said. It's happened before, And if we see it again, we're not going to be flabbergasted. We're going to see it as a possibility. All right, let me ask you this question here. And I want to say this is a take that I'm workshopping. So I want you to buy it or sell it. The Eagles are more likely to get back to the Super Bowl than the Kansas City Chiefs this year.
Sold. No chance. I like the Chiefs to go back. And I know it's the gauntlet of the AFC. The AFC's tougher. The Chiefs have been bad. I'm not even necessarily buying that I think the Chiefs are going to make the Super Bowl. I just think there is something clearly wrong with Philadelphia. And I know it's a great question because it's two teams where you're saying, can they flip the switch in this moment, right? They both obviously have week one games. Can they flip the switch to get back to the teams? Philly was 10-1, like we had talked about. The Chiefs got out to the nice start, and even though they weren't looking like the world beater Chiefs, they were still like 6-7-3 and in pretty good control before they had dropped that couple games. I think they lost two in a row or two out of three, three out of four, something along those lines, and they just looked mortal, I guess you would say, right? They looked very beatable. But I think at the end of the day, and I've said this from the beginning, I said it when we went through our power rankings a while back, it's Pat Mahomes, it's Andy Reid, and I just trust that they could flip the switch and get it back a little bit more than I trust that Sirianni and Matt Patricia and the Eagles are going to be able to do so. Their secondary is atrocious. It has been all year. I mean, Tyrod Taylor and the Giants were running wide open against them last week, and they were trying, at least in the beginning part of that game. It doesn't feel fluky to me that the Eagles are on this side of the win-loss category now, because they won so many tight, close, difficult games early to get to that 10-1. It felt, and even Eagles fans will say, it didn't feel like the same Eagles team. They didn't feel confident about this group, but they were finding a way. And when you're 10-1, it's hard to say anything but they're a top tier team. They're a juggernaut team. But I think the Chiefs are more likely. I'm not saying I'm buying either one of them. We'll find out with our picks later on this week where my head's really at. But between those two, buy or sell, I'm going to sell the fact that the Eagles are more likely to get to the Super Bowl.
And I think it's obviously tough for either team. They're both reeling. They're weirdly in a very similar position. Their weaknesses are kind of inverse, though, right? Like, the Chiefs' defense has been really good. Their DBs are really good. Eagles' DBs really suck. The Eagles have a bunch of great weapons, and the Chiefs' weapons suck. So they are very much inverse to each other right now. They do have two quarterbacks who we trust to different extents, but we do trust both of them. However, Jalen Hurts has not been putting on great performances for a good portion of this season now. And if he falls on his face here, there's going to be some questions. Oh, I remember an Eagles quarterback with a new head coach who made a big-time run, who dabbled with MVP talks, who made it to a Super Bowl, or at least his team made it to a Super Bowl, and then he kind of fell off the face of the earth. And I don't think anyone's going to say that about Jalen Hurts just yet. However, we know how this league works. If Jalen Hurts falls on his face in this playoff, he's going to get the excuse, oh, he's injured. He's been playing through an injury since week six. He wasn't himself this year because of the knee and the leg and the thumb and this and that. He's going to get that this year. But if the Eagles don't get back on track, as it'll get harder and harder to have that phenomenal roster they had last year, as they have to pay Jalen Hurts, pay Devonta Smith soon, they're going to have to start paying some more folks. And that O-line gets a little bit older and the running backs aren't as good and the D-line isn't showing, right? Like, all these things are going to start piling up. And if the Eagles are grinding their way to 9-10 win seasons and Hurts is struggling a little bit, the conversations are going to be had, because he's not thrown in the Dak Prescott conversation yet. He's not thrown in the Kirk Cousins conversation because he made a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. We've seen it before. We've seen teams and quarterbacks make Super Bowls and then not really do it much more again in their career. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I do think that pressure is very serious, and I do think they happen to get a little bit lucky with this week one matchup, Cody. So let's talk about the matchups real quick, because none of my other questions have to do with the Buccaneers or the Dolphins. For all the things I just said about Jalen Hurts, you can say some of those things about Baker Mayfield right now. He looked extremely banged up. They couldn't score the ball on the Carolina Panthers last week in week 18. Some of the Buccaneers stuff isn't looking as good as it was 4 weeks ago. So I think the Eagles, even though they lost the division, they ended up as a lower seed. You know, they finished up officially at the 5 seed. they kind of got lucky enough by that 10-1 start. Remember, 10-1 to 11-6. They got lucky to get the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at this point in the season, who are also a little bit banged up, and Baker clearly cannot handle it when he's not fully healthy.
They did. They didn't look great last week. They didn't look great, obviously, the week before, where they could have taken the division against the Saints, and it came down to that matchup in Carolina. And by circumstance, I was forced to root for Carolina. And it's so funny how I've been saying that I think they're the worst team in football. And not even I understood just how difficult it is for that team to score. The Bucs were very fortunate to win that game. They got a ball punched through the end zone and recovered on a DJ Chark touchdown. They had another touchdown brought back by an illegal shift or some type of, I think it was an illegal shift, but a pre-snap penalty. Not like a hold or something that has a direct result of the touchdown. And a couple other things. They missed field goals. Like the Panthers were just the Panthers. The Bucs were not good offensively. They were kind of sloppy. But here's my counter. Here's my opposite side of that. The Bucs are now in the spot where nobody believes in them. The Bucs are now in the spot where they are the underdog. And Baker Mayfield thrives in that type of a spot. He's not really the guy that when you go out and go, oh, Baker could get it done, where I go, oh, he's going to. He's the type of guy when people are on the opposite side, he kind of can come out of nowhere, and that's what I see in him. And maybe the Bucs just got those bad games out of the way, and they did stumble into the playoffs, but maybe they got them out of the way, and that they can bounce back, and they've got nothing to lose. I mean, they were not expected to be here. They were third preseason in their own division to win it, in a division that had win totals of like 8.5 and 9.5, and 9 wins ends up winning it. So the Bucs were an afterthought, and it's still a similar roster to the Super Bowl team, not that far removed. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, veteran leadership on both sides of the ball, a very good run defense against an Eagles team that if you make them pass-heavy, pass-first type of an offense, you might be able to find some success. Jalen Hurts' finger looked – it was completely dislocated last week. He's obviously going to play, but it could bother him some. A.J. Brown had the knee injury. I think he's going to play. But even if it hinders him a little bit, a team that's already stumbling to not be healthy too – and that was the thing about the Eagles last year. They were so remarkably healthy, and for the better part of this year they were, and now injuries are starting to pile up. I think there's a real chance that the Bucs can, at home, take this game from the Eagles. It's only a 3-point spread. I think the hot ticket, the easy play, is to take the Eagles here. But I don't see it that way. Maybe it's my blinders. Maybe it's my NFC East bias, but I just don't think the Eagles, and I said it with the last question, I don't think they just get it right. And the Bucs are a more than formidable offense. They've got big play abilities with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Like I said, Rashad White has been running the ball well. Baker's going to take those chances. He's not going to play conservative. And if they can hit some of those big shots, if they could get a lead and put this pressure on Philly, I think they have as good a chance as any at one of the week one upsets.
So let me throw some numbers at you here that may counter your East Coast bias a little bit of that the Eagles are the hot ticket. Believe it or not, Cody, according to pregame.com, 52% of the tickets on the Buccaneers, which that's not a huge spread. It's not like they're 70% of the tickets, but 52% in that type of game when they are the underdog, that's a bigger meaning to 52% than a normal 52%, if that makes sense. We're talking about an underdog, and we're talking about the Super Bowl or, you know, Super Bowl runner-ups from last year who have been a juggernaut for half this season, winning 10 of their first 11 games. 52% of the tickets on the Bucs is no joke right there. Obviously, it's over 50, but that's a nice chunk of tickets right there, and 59% of the cash on the Eagles. So maybe, just maybe, this is a spot here where the Eagles can figure out a way to get over a hump a little bit here and get right. All the things you said, completely accurate. I said thumb before. I meant finger for Jalen Hurts because it wasn't his thumb. It was a different finger, whatever. All that stuff is super accurate. I do agree with all of it. I don't know if the Bucs are in the perfect state of mind either, or I should say state of health, to just, you know, take on this challenger, because I think they're really going to struggle to run the ball. So they're going to have to pass the ball. And if Baker starts to put the ball in harm's way, that's the chance for the Eagles to strike. However, their DBs and linebackers are trash. So maybe that's what they want to do anyway. On Picket, which is another app I've been using, if you guys haven't checked out Picket, very good app for gambling stuff. It's 45% of the tickets are on the Bucks, so not quite over 50, but still. I don't know about you, Cody. When you hear those numbers, do you think a little bit differently about how the NFL community is thinking about this game?
A little bit, but the other thing is it's Tuesday night as we're recording, and we know as the week goes, those numbers will probably change which way they go. You know, obviously, we don't have the crystal ball, but knowing that the numbers can change, it's not going to skew my opinion just yet. Come Sunday, if it's like 48% of the tickets are on the Bucks, but 65% of the cash is on the Eagles, that's where you're like, oh, okay, now I got to be careful because the sharp money's coming in on the Philly side. So it's definitely something to look at. I love when you bring those numbers because from a, not from just like a watching football perspective, but from a gambling perspective, it's really, really a good way to have an indication of what's going to happen in that game. It's not 100%, nothing is, but if you're on the sharp side, you typically feel a little bit better about your pick, right?
Yeah, right. Sharp is where you want to be, yeah. Right? So I get it. And I know it's so easy. You and I and Pat and Mark, we do it all the time. Oh, everyone's on this team. Everyone's betting on this team. But are they? Or is it just like your friends, right? Because like we're all in the tri-state area, so we're all a little bit closer to these people who root for the Giants, Jets, Eagles, Patriots, probably not really, but you know what right. I'm saying here, right? So maybe sometimes we are off about everyone being on a side. When you look at the numbers from these places like pregame.com, who does a great job with all this data, it's like, oh, no, not everyone's on the Eagles. Actually, there's more people on the Bucks right now. We'll see, right? And great point. Obviously, it's Tuesday. So many more bets. Like I haven't placed any bets yet for this week. So we shall see where it moves over time and if the spread moves at all as well. I did see on Picket, though, 89% of the cash on the under with only 65% of the ticket. So perhaps maybe some thoughts about an ugly game.
Yeah, I wonder if any of that's weather related at all. I saw two games and I don't remember what they are off the top of my head. Bad podcasting by me, but two of them that the weather was supposed to be a factor going in and people were trying to hop on the under. Actually, one of them was the Bills and the Steelers for sure.
And the other one is the game we're about to talk about.
Cool.
The Chiefs, segway. On the other side of this take here, the Chiefs are taking on the Miami Dolphins in Kansas City. Projected temperature, 6 degrees. Cody, looking right now on the AccuWeather. Let me double check. That's what it said earlier, but I'm sure it's pretty similar at this point in time. 6 degrees with some moisture in the air expected in Kansas City. I'm sorry. Wow. 2 degrees. According to AccuWeather, 2 degrees in Kansas City expected on Saturday night. It's going to be frigid. And we know what that typically means for Tua and the Dolphins. It's not great numbers talking about that team with how they play the game and how they want to move the ball. That's probably not a great sign for the Dolphins. But do you have any thoughts about the Chiefs and Dolphins in that game? I have a feeling where you're leaning, but let me hear it.
The weather is a real concern because the Dolphins and Tua in particular don't play well in cold weather. It's well documented, unfortunately, for the Dolphins. But I wonder if just you were in a vacuum and we look at both of these teams, who that really benefits, because the Dolphins can run the football. They don't have to throw the ball downfield as much as you may think. They've got Raheem Mostert, hopefully. They have Devon Achane. And you can throw the ball underneath to Tyreek Hill and let him run with it. You can throw the ball underneath to Jaylen Waddle, who should be back, and let him run with it. So if I didn't know those numbers about the Dolphins, I'd probably be a little bit more confident in taking them, or at least – yeah, leaning towards that side. In Kansas City, in Arrowhead, it's so hard to bet against Pat Mahomes. But I got to tell you, the first lean I've had has been Miami all so far. That was what I felt going into the Bills game. And for a while, that looked to be okay. And I actually ultimately ended up having the Bills -2.5. And that got us to third place in our pool. So the Bills came through for us there. But this is to me, I think this is the most intriguing matchup to me going into the week, because it's not just the storyline, Tyreek and you know, going against his old team. It's not really that. It's just the Chiefs have not looked like the Chiefs, man. They just haven't. And the Dolphins have that ability to be explosive, to completely, you know, just run up and down the field and make it a track meet. They have the ability to do that, and they haven't had their weapons, and they feel like they're getting just completely overlooked and bypassed. And I hope you can tell me with the numbers, with the percentage of bets, if that's the case, because it feels that way to me.
Well, I don't know if this is what you want to hear, but right now on pregame.com, 54% of the tickets on the Kansas City Chiefs, 74% of the cash on the Kansas City Chiefs.
So that goes along with what I'm saying then, right? It feels like the Dolphins are being kind of looked past, and people seem to think the Chiefs can get it right here and at least get out of there with a win. I'll play my hand a little bit here. I think I end up buying Miami up to something of like an 8.5. When I don't know if you feel the same way, Pete, but when I see a number at about 2 or 3 that I think, or 2 to 4, say, and I think it's almost a pick 'em in my eyes, I could see either team winning, I always want to buy that team up past that 7, past that 8, and try and get the full one score treatment. And obviously that means I'd have to pair it with something, but I think that's where I'm leaning, and I keep doing this. It's an emotional hedge, because the last future that I have alive, at least preseason future that I have alive, was the Chiefs to make the AFC Championship game as plus 170. And I'm like, yeah, they made it 5 years in a row. You're giving me plus 170. I'll take that, you know, every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And then I did the same thing with all these like Mahomes bets that none of them hit. So this is a different Chiefs, man. We'll see. But my initial lean is still Miami.
And I think the difference between the Chiefs and the Eagles, to bring them back in for a second, is even with the shortcomings of the Chiefs offense this year, if it's the fourth quarter and there's 3 minutes or less left and the Chiefs need a score to tie or win the game, we are still going to sit there and say, of course, Patrick Mahomes is going to score.
Absolutely.
Even though this season has not proven that to be true, right? What have you done for me lately? He hasn't done it for us lately. However, we're going to watch that game on Saturday night, and if the Chiefs are down one score with 2 minutes left, we're going to say, yeah, of course, Patrick Mahomes is going to get us to the red zone, and it's going to be probably a tie game or whatever, right? Like, we still feel that way about Patrick Mahomes, even though we probably shouldn't right now. I actually really like your lean right there. My take was going to be, oh, I think the Chiefs are going to get right and like kind of right the ship in the playoffs, because it's Patrick Mahomes, it's what they're going to do. And everybody is probably thinking along the lines of your first point, it's freezing cold, that's not good for Tua, that's not good for the Dolphins. Maybe that's the time to say, let's look at these teams and their strengths. And maybe the Dolphins' strengths do work a little bit better now than they have in years past when it gets really cold out, because they weren't running the ball like that last year. They were just hitting those deep bombs and being fun and exciting. This year, they were fun and exciting hitting deep bombs. They were also explosively running the ball. So that makes it extremely interesting. All right, next one, Cody O'Connor. It is realistic to see Joe Flacco and the Browns make a run to the AFC Championship or Super Bowl.
I am quite literally buying that as the Friendship Factory, one of my fantastic group chats and one of my gambling group chats that's been going for years now. We all collectively decided we were going to take the Browns a couple weeks ago. My buddy has been somewhat jokingly telling us about how elite Joe Flacco is. It's hard to tell with that guy. He's kind of like a Mark Shen type of a troll, if you will. but we all took it. I put like $20 on him at like 35-1, I believe. And I do believe that there's at least some type of a chance. So probably tells you where I lean for this week. But I think it is actually realistic that they beat Houston, that they go and play Baltimore, which is the ultimate storyline of all of these cool ones, and we're going to get to some more, but that would be the ultimate storyline, and I will be in between a rock and a hard place, because I absolutely love this Ravens team too, but I do believe it is plausible, possible, and I'm buying it.
Wow, I love it. So I might have tipped my hand earlier in the segment here talking about all these storylines seem to work out so perfectly in the wild card weekend. And it just tells me that something's not going to work out as perfectly as we want it in the next round. And wow, Joe Flacco going to Baltimore to play a playoff game. What world do we live in? This is impossible. If you told us at any point before he took over as the Browns quarterback this year that Joe Flacco would play a game, a playoff game in Baltimore, we would have guessed that, you know, a year from now, he was the backup in Baltimore, giving him a contract because he's going to become a coach and after he retires and someone got hurt and he had to go in, right? Like, that's what we would have said is the most likely scenario of Joe Flacco playing a playoff game in Baltimore at this point in his life. No, now it's realistic. Now he's the favorite to go in and get there. That's likely. It's possible. However, my completely unscientific view on this game is that it's too good to be true to us to get that beautiful, that delicious of a storyline to have Flacco go to Baltimore. And that's like my stupid, no good reason to say the Texans are going to win in wildcard weekend. Cody, is that unscientific reason anything to you? Does that mean anything to you?
I did it just last week with the NFC South. I said, I don't want to back the Bucks, and I just thought the weirdness of the NFC South might prevail. And there was no numbers, obviously. There's no merit. That goes along with watching every week and knowing that weirdness can strike at any time. So I love the theory. I hear what you're saying. The Texans are more than a formidable opponent. That's going to be a great, you know, kickoff to the wild card weekend, of course, with the Texans at 4:30 on Saturday. Now, there's something to that, man, for sure. For sure there is something to that. There's just no rhyme or reason sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, and the rhyme or reason in that particular matchup is the Texans do have an offense that can kind of hang, right? Like, even against a good defense in Cleveland, which they're probably one of the top three defenses in the league, we know what they can do. We know what Myles Garrett brings to the table. C.J. Stroud has the chops to make big-time plays. Nico Collins has the chops to make big-time plays. If they're in a shootout and Flacco, which, you know, his M.O. so far in Cleveland has been play action, deep bombs, let's push the ball. I might throw a pick, and that's okay. We're deep. We're going to defend the hell out of the ball, and we're going to score even with a couple turnovers. I can see Houston being in that type of game. So that's that on the Texans front. But also, I must mention, the Browns can win and not face Baltimore. If the Dolphins or Steelers win their matchup, then you get Dolphins-Ravens or Steelers-Ravens, which are good matchups, but not what we want.
Right.
Not what we want.
We'll see. I do definitely lean Cleveland, though, in that game if we're just doing it.
Yeah, I kind of lean Houston, but mostly because of this unscientific thing that I have going right now. It's mostly just like I think that it's going to be weird and the Flacco thing is going to cool off and there's going to be a couple picks and there's going to be a big-time play from this rookie quarterback who's a sensation who's going to make some noise. So that's kind of my lean right now, but not our picks. The picks are coming later in the week. All right, let's talk about more young quarterbacks, Cody. More young quarterbacks. I don't know how to make this a buy or sell, so I'm just going to say something, and then you're going to buy it or sell it. I'll say it like this, since I just kind of gave my lean, actually. C.J. Stroud will outperform Jordan Love in the playoffs.
That's crazy that I'm going to buy that after all I just said, but I freaking love C.J. Stroud, man. I know I'm probably in the majority with that, but his poise in the pocket, his comfortability, especially as a rookie, man, he just kind of relaxes back there and just bobs and weaves around. And that throw he made last week against the Colts, pressure's on, he's running back, and he's got a crosser going towards the sideline. And maybe 15 yards or so downfield off his back foot, he gets it. And I think it was Nico Collins who – everything was Nico Collins. He was a monster in that game. That was an incredibly impressive throw, and he has a couple of those. He's precise. He is a shot taker, a risk taker, which, again, I always love having that type of a guy who's not afraid to move the ball, to push it downfield, and we're going to have two of those in that game. It doesn't mean that I don't like Jordan Love and what I've seen from him, but I'm not – as there with Jordan Love as I am in saying I think C.J. Stroud is a guy. You know, like I think Jordan Love is, but I know that CJ Stroud is a dude. So I'm buying the CJ Stroud. I think he could have a good game and they could still lose. And I trust him a little bit more than I trust Jordan Love, albeit I've been very impressed with Jordan Love of late.
It's definitely possible for both of these quarterbacks to throw multiple picks, right? Like we've seen Jordan Love have these blow up games where he does not look good. And then we've seen him have games where he looks like he can't be stopped, right? Love has had these moments. If you bet against the Packers in any certain game this year where he looked good, you're like, what? Yeah. Does this guy ever mess up? Does he not? I thought he stunk. Like what happened, right? Like this happens with Jordan Love a lot.
I know you've been on that side. And I feel like I have been like way too often, including last week where I took the Bears. And yes, it was a 17-9 game, but he did make a couple throws, one in the end zone where I go, did he squeeze that in? I mean, are you?
Yeah.
No way. It's between two defenders. And he's been able to do a couple of those, some of those back foot throws that look very Aaron Rodgers-esque. So, yeah, he has been impressive.
It feels like it's likely that the Cowboys can give him fits. It feels like it's likely the Browns can give Stroud fits. So I'm going to buy my own statement and say CJ Stroud will outperform Jordan Love in the playoffs as well. But both are in tough spots. Obviously, the spread in Dallas Packers is 7.5. Spread in Browns Texans is 3 or 2.5, depends where you find it. So the odds tell us it's more likely for Love to have some struggles. Mm-hmm. Next one. Here's a big one. Buried it a little bit. That's okay. We want people to hang around for the big-time storylines. Matthew Stafford will spoil the Detroit Lions' first home playoff game since 1991.
Can't wait to tell you, for you to tell me, rather, that I'm wrong about this and where the money is. But it feels like the Rams are too hot of a ticket. They feel too hot of a ticket. And I really like the Rams. I love the weapons that they have. I love how Stafford has been, you know, Puka. I was thinking about this the other day, actually. If you talk about the Rams offense right now, you might mention Cooper Kupp as the third or fourth maybe guy that you're going to bring up. Because you're going to talk about Kyren Williams recently, right? Then you're going to talk about Puka Nacua's season. Right, how he is breaking rookie records left and right, receptions and yards, incredibly impressive. You're going to talk about Matt Stafford, who is the obvious leader of that offense. Hell, you might even bring up Sean McVay and then get to Cooper Kupp, who was, you know, the Super Bowl MVP. I don't think he didn't win a regular season MVP, but damn near, you know, he could have. He had like that 1,900 yard season or whatever in that Super Bowl run. So they have the weapons, they have the guys, and it was, you know, back to the preseason idea that this Rams team was going to go over their win total, right? Because we mentioned that. And the thinking was they have Matt Stafford, they have Sean McVay. When you have that coach and quarterback combination with at least a weapon in Cooper Kupp, you've got a shot. And, you know, I think both of us ended up getting kind of spooked off of that by the so-called experts. And I'm going to keep calling them out on that because I'm a little mad at myself for listening to them. Cooper Kupp was hurt preseason. So that kind of threw me.
Well, people saying that they were going to be in line for worst record in the league.
They said this was,
and me and you were like, can't they be sneaky fun and competitive? Like we said it,
I know.
Go back preseason pod, the NFL storyline draft. One of us picked it as a storyline saying, I feel like this team can be sneaky competitive. And they were more than that. They were just straight up competitive for almost the entire year.
Yeah. And it's not like either of us saw Puka Nacua coming, right? Like none of us are going to call each other a draft expert and be like, oh, this guy, Puka Nacua. But I was told this was the worst roster construction maybe in NFL history. That's what I was told about this team. I was like, maybe they know something more than I do, but they still have Aaron Donald on the defensive line. And they have Stafford, and they have McVay, and they have Cooper Kupp. So all that being said, I think the Lions are going to win this game at home. All of that. But I think the Lions are going to win this game. I really want to hear what the money percentages are because, again, it feels like the Rams are the hot ticket. And I will give you this lean. I think this is an over game. The total's 51.5. It's huge. But I think that's accurate. Because of all the weapons I mentioned, the Lions have struggled mightily defensively. The Rams aren't some defensive juggernaut. They gave up 26 to the Giants in their last game where they played all their guys.
In a dome.
In a dome. And so weather's obviously, you know, not going to be a factor. I think this is an over game. I don't know if I pick a side or not, but my lean is Lions. And again, I have to hear where the money is. I'm so curious.
All right, let's go. Pregame.com. Rams, 65% of the tickets. 71% of the cash. Not a huge spread of cash just yet, but a little bit of sharp money perhaps on the Rams very early in the week. So those numbers will definitely change. And on Pickett, to give us two spots here of data, 77% of the tickets on the Rams, 88% of the money. So similar spread there. But you were right. I think the Rams are the hot item. You know, we talked about that with the Bucks and Eagles. I don't know if there is really anyone who wants to back that game too hard right now at this point in the week. People are coming in saying the Rams are frisky. No one wants to see the Rams. The Lions don't want to see the Rams. The Niners don't want to see the Rams. No one wants to see the damn Rams. Stafford and Kupp and Puka and Kyren are cooking. You don't want to see them. And that, Cody, is a great way to look at it, because sometimes when you hear all this team, it's a classic Chris Berman line. So you're all on the Rams. I'll take the Raiders. No, the Lions. Right. It's like saying the Raiders.
The theme of the voice. Pod, yeah.
Yeah, so I like your lean. I like your unscientific, which turned out to be a little bit scientific with all these numbers in the Rams' favor here to take the Lions possibly in this favorite underdog spot where they're a favorite and they're -3, and that spread's not going lower than 2.5. But they are kind of an underdog as well, which is a weird situation. I don't think that goes to 2.5 because then it gets way too easy to tease up those Rams to 8.5, and then you got a couple teaser
lines. That's like the thing to look out for, right? As all this money comes in on the Rams, is the line moving? Because if it's not, that's kind of a tell that the books are okay with keeping it at -3, and that should give right. some type of an indication of what they think is going to happen. And as smart as I may think I am, and as smart as you are, Pete, we're not as smart as the odds makers of Vegas. These guys they're on the money. No. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see. And can't gloss over the fact that Sam Laporta is not going to be playing for Detroit. That's a huge loss for them. Huge loss. So that
great
is
point. We didn't even bring
something.
It up. They're already so Amon-Ra dependent, and now without Laporta, how many more targets can Amon-Ra get? My guy gets 14 targets a game, it feels like, right? So what's he going to get, 17 targets? Maybe. Maybe he will. I don't know. We've seen teams do that before. We know in the Cooper Kupp run that they peppered him like they probably shouldn't have, and maybe it hurt him for seasons moving forward, but they won the freaking whole thing. So maybe Amon-Ra might just get 17 targets on Sunday.
They're definitely, if I'm Dan Campbell, I am trying to lean on the run game as much as I possibly can. I got a two-headed monster back there. Start with David Montgomery, right? Like kind of like the old Giants used to do. I can't help but go back to him. But it was Jacobs and then Bradshaw, right? And you wear him down with a guy like Jacobs, or in this case, Montgomery. And then you get a little flash of lightning with a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs. So if I'm Dan Campbell, I'm trying to run the ball as much as I can and lean on the backfield more than I have to lean on the passing game without Laporta. That, again, that's a huge, you know, red zone target for him. It's another, I don't know, 7-8 targets a game probably Laporta was getting. So where are those going to go? Is Josh Reynolds going to step up in this spot? Is Khalif Raymond going to? Is Jameson Williams going to bet on himself? I don't know. So we'll see.
Nice. 63% of the tickets on the over. 83% of the cash. So you're on the money there with the ideas of that game as well. All right, Cody, last one. Here we go. Buy or sell. The Bills are indeed the true Super Bowl sweetheart team that everybody has been calling them since they started this 5-game win streak.
This is a tough one, because how many weeks in a row do we have to watch the Bills shoot themselves in the foot time and time and time again? And they've obviously been able to dig themselves out because they're an incredibly talented football team. But this was the comparison I had for them, and it's probably not fair, but it's definitely recency bias. I don't care. They are the Panthers, except they're really freaking talented, or vice versa. But they are so dumb, but they can overcome it with the amount of talent that Josh Allen has in that offense and whatnot. But they're so dumb. So I guess I'm selling it a little bit, but I got to give my brother some credit here. If this pans out for him, it will be one of the greatest takes I've ever seen. He's been saying all year long, preseason. If the Bill, he liked the Bills, he's got them to win the Super Bowl. He said it is going to come in a year that it is ugly and gross, and everyone finally gets off of the bandwagon, and they kind of surprise you and come out of nowhere. And at 6-6, it looked like maybe it was just ugly and gross, and now here they are, division winners, hosting a playoff game against the team that not nobody wants to see, as in they don't want to see them and face them. It's nobody as a viewer wants to see them play football anymore, the Pittsburgh Steelers. So the Bills are set up to at least win in wild card weekend and get something rolling, but they're hard to back because of the mistakes time and time again. Again, despite the fact that they are as talented as anyone, they're a tough team to back right now for me. So I am going to sell that.
And it's so weird because it's like you think back to when this conversation started, right? The Bills weren't even in the playoffs yet, and they won. Who did they beat? That was like a big win for them. The Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs
earlier Yeah.
Like maybe what, 4 or 5 weeks ago? I'm just trying to remember.
In a game they had to have after they lost to the Eagles in overtime. I think it was maybe the week or two after.
Correct. And then they also could have lost that game to the Chiefs, where, you know, Kadarius Toney lined up offsides, and we all know what happened there, and that sucked for the Bills. But I'm sorry, it sucked for the Chiefs, but the Bills took that and ran, and then they won out the rest of their way, and they won the damn division, right? And it's like, oh, the Bills are back. They're on this streak. They made it all the way back to win this damn division. Listen to these games that they've won, Cody, on this streak, and it was right after the Eagles game. They beat the Chiefs by that Kadarius Toney mishap there. They beat the Cowboys pretty handily. That's their best win by far. Then they struggled to beat the Chargers. They won by 2 points. They struggled to beat the Patriots. They won by 6 points. And then they were losing to the Dolphins when the game was really, really important for both sides to win the division. And they came back and won with some luck on their side. So it's not like on this streak here that they've been a juggernaut just dominating people, which is why I was flabbergasted to see this spread at 10. Cody, they're 10-point favorites. Outside of that huge win against the Cowboys, most of their wins this year have not been pretty. They've mostly been winning ugly in the second part of the year. They have two games out of their final 6 wins here that were by more than a touchdown. So the 10-point spread is crazy to me, especially with the idea that the Steelers play these ugly games where they're in it for no reason and they're getting outgained, and yet they still have a chance to win. And how are they winning in the fourth quarter? The Bills have 520 yards and 13 points. The Steelers have 220 yards and 17 points. What's happening right now? That being said, is that why I like the Bills? Yes, it is, Cody. Yes, it is.
You got me on that one. Usually I know when you're setting it up to go the other way, but I think it's 10 because of the fact that betting on the Steelers is so hard to do. Betting on Mason Rudolph and that offense to move the ball is really difficult. But you've got Mike Tomlin in the spot that he's an underdog and nobody believes in him. And he is as good a coach as we have in the league. Somehow the Steelers fans and organization maybe don't seem to appreciate just how constant they are as an above 500 team. I mean, we're Giants fans, Pete. We would kill to go to the playoffs just back-to-back years. Just back-to-back years would be really, yeah, really nice. And he does it every year. And in the spots where nobody believes in him, that's where they seem to have their best showings. But again, saying all that, you just know, well, I'm backing Mason Rudolph. And now the TJ Wattless Steelers, which, I mean, outside of losing a quarterback, and if you're the Steelers, I'd rather lose Mason Rudolph than T.J. yes. Watt, no questions asked. T.J. Watt
moved 2.5 right? points.
I mean, T.J. Watt's as an important of a player, not named a quarterback as we have in this playoff. So that's a killer for them. I don't know what I'll do with that game. So we'll find out later in the week.
Every fiber of my being is like, this is going to be stupid and ugly, and the Bills are going to have to score a late touchdown to win, and they probably will. They probably will win. But 10 points is a lot of freaking points in a playoff game. And TJ Watt moved the spread after he got announced out. 7.5 it opened at. Now it's 10. So he's 2.5 points. That's huge for a non-quarterback. That's a huge swing. Yeah. Can't you see the Steelers just for no reason getting all this pressure on Josh Allen? Can't you see That other defensive lineman that was a beast for them this year, something.
Is it Hayward?
Haywood Highsmith? No, that's a basketball player. I always mess those two names up.
I don't know, but I know who you're talking about because he's always in on the plays, and I go, oh, there's the other guy every time. I'm like, oh, he's not TJ, but he's pretty good. I don't know off the top of my head. I try and look it up, but
I'm gonna find it here. But can't you just see, like,
for sure,
for no reason, somebody else just going off?
It's
in that regard.
It's almost too perfect in that sense of a Bills team that shoots themselves in the foot and the Steelers team that just hangs around even though they don't feel like they should have. A fumble, you know, an interception in the red zone, or maybe three from Josh because he does that sometimes because they always are in the red zone. Weirdness certainly could strike here. It's going to take until Thursday. It might take for me to actually bet on it until, you know, that Sunday, but it's a good line. It's a good line.
Alex Highsmith. I knew Highsmith. It was Highsmith.
Okay.
Haywood Highsmith is a guy in the NBA. I don't know why that name just doesn't get out of my head with this guy. Alex Highsmith, seven or eight sacks on the year. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. I was ready driving to work. I'm listening to podcast talking about NFL stuff, and I'm listening. I'm like, you know what? I'm ready. I'm going to get to work. I'm going to bet the Steelers right now. Plus 10. I'm doing it. And I open up the app and I go, but maybe the Bills are just going to win by 14 or 20, or maybe they're just going to win 30-3, right? Like, maybe, because the Bills can do that too.
For sure.
Right? Early in the year, I said about how they haven't won more than a touchdown much in the second half of the year. In the first half of the year, they won their first game by 28, their second game by 34, their third game by 28, right? Like, so they can do it. They just haven't done it recently. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know where I land. Oh, good stuff, Cody. Any last storylines or last points, playoff points that you want to just get out there that maybe we didn't hit on?
I think we went through everything. We went through everything.
All right, well, give me a Super Bowl prediction just for funsies. All right,
there you go. Thank you for bringing that up. I forgot I was going to do that. Maybe too hot. Maybe I'm trying to be different here. I do think the Ravens come out of the AFC, and I ultimately think that they win the Super Bowl. But there's got to be some weirdness somewhere with how odd this NFL season was. It can't just be the Niners and the Ravens, can it? And this could have me land flat on my face as they could absolutely lose in week one, in wild card rather. I think Detroit has a good chance as anybody to be able to come out of the NFC. If they beat the Rams, can they get it rolling? I don't know if they get LaPorta back at some point, but I just think there's got to be some weirdness somewhere. And I'm looking through and I'm doing a pool actually now for the playoffs, a completely different one than the one I've mentioned all season long. And as I went through it and went through each matchup, I ended up with the Lions playing the Niners. And I was like, I'm taking the Lions. Like, who? I'm doing it. So I'm going Ravens over Lions in the Super Bowl. So there you go. There you have it.
There you go. I love it. I am way too biased to bet the Rams game. I'm just too biased. I, for some reason, have loved the Rams. Not loved. I've liked the Rams a lot since McVay's got there. I've kind of just pulled for them randomly. When Stafford went there, because I was a Stafford backer forever, and people are calling him Stat Padford. I had to defend him that his franchise was poverty, and he's not his fault, all this stuff. So I really pulled for the Rams, and I was really happy they won the Super Bowl. And now still I have this like weird thing when I watch the Rams. Like, I pull for them. I like Cooper Kupp. I like their guys. I like McVay. Like, I pull for them. So I'm way too biased to like pick that game realistically. Similarly with the Ravens, I've just been pulling for Lamar since he got in the league, and I pull for him hard in that nature. So I have a ticket from over a month ago, maybe first week of December, last week, November type range, where I did Niners to beat the Ravens plus 1700. Nice ticket. Should have put more on it. I didn't. It's what I do. I don't put enough on my tickets. It's what I do. But I have that in, but I'm not going to pick that. I'm going to say, I'm going to stick with the Ravens, even though I told you I'm biased and it probably shouldn't. Stick with the Ravens.
Dallas
Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys make the Super Bowl this year, Cody, and they win the Super Bowl. The Dallas Cowboys, just like the Bills, are going to do it in a year that's weird, in a year where they're good, but are they that good? Are they going to do this? Is Dak Prescott actually made it? Yeah, but he's going to fall apart in the playoffs. Yeah, he's a loser. He's not clutch. You're only not clutch until you're clutch. You're always not clutch until you're clutch. And this happens a lot in the NBA. Oh, this guy could never win. This guy could never do it. Yeah, because he hasn't yet. So you're going to say that and more than likely be right, because most people don't be the best player on a championship team. 99.5%, 99.9% of players are not the best player on a championship team. So say that about anybody and you'll probably be right.
It's the easiest take.
It is the easiest take. Oh, I used to defend James Harden so crazily.
Me too.
he's not clutch. He falls apart in the play. He was the number one contender to the best team of the century. Okay? Let's not act like he sucked. And that was my thing for a long time. He's only a loser in your eyes because he's never won. That doesn't mean he's not just as good with a few bounces that he could have won against the Warriors, because that's true. That's very true, right? So with the Cowboys and the Bills, like you were saying before, and Lamar Jackson for that matter, people say they're not clutch. People say they're not going to get it done in the playoffs. Yeah, you're right for now until you're not. The Cowboys make the Super Bowl this year and they win it.
Hey, you were on a, preseason. You said they were going to win the division, I remember. You really haven't wavered on that. You've been on it. They won the division. They've got the home field. It could happen. It's got to be something weird this year. Again, like going back to that point of there's no...
Or maybe it's the year the Ravens and Niners
maybe
just roll.
And again, I remember saying it last year, and then it was Chiefs-Eagles, but this one feels more bizarre. It just doesn't feel like there is a real juggernaut team, especially after the Niners got their butts kicked on Christmas night. It was like, well, there goes that. Now who is it? So especially in the NFC, I'm ready for some weirdness, man. Bring it on. Give me Baker in the divisional round. Give me, Jordan Love to cover and have a good game. Give me all the weirdness that you can. So let's see.
All right. So what's weirder? Is it, I'm trying to make sure that this is possible, because I think it is. Is it more weird to see the Lions, so Goff versus Baker in the second round? Is that possible? I think that's possible.
A three and a four.
It depends, because they reseed.
Yeah, it just depends on who's going to win. I guess anything is kind of plausible depending on who wins.
I think it would have to be. No, it's totally possible, actually, because if it would just have to. Oh, no, it's not possible, right? Because the Rams and Packers, I don't know, whatever. Jordan Love versus Baker Mayfield at some point or something stupid. Like, we're going to be watching Jared Goff versus Jordan Love or something like that. It's going to be weird. It's going to be very weird.
Can't you see it, though? Joe Flacco and Jared Goff are your Super Bowl quarterbacks. I mean, come on.
Oh, my God. It'd be insane, and it's possible. Or, God forbid, Mason Rudolph, right?
All right, Pete. I think that's it.
That's enough. That's more than enough. That's more than enough. All right, Cody O'Connor, we'll be back with picks later in the week. Can't wait for that. We'll see how many legs Mark Shenlugin uses. He still has a couple games to choose from here, right? We got one, two, three, four, five, six games. He needs to get three picks out of six games. We'll see if he can do it. I have
Aren't you ready for Mahomes 150 plus passing yards, the Steelers plus 27.5, the Bills also on the money line in that same game?
Dude, 100% ready. It's going to be Mahomes 150 plus with the Chiefs plus 10.5, Josh Allen plus 150 passing yards, and the Bills, plus 3.5. It's going to be minus 120. And then Patrick Mahomes in the 2-degree weather is going to throw for like 146 yards. He's going to rush for 90 and they're going to win by two touchdowns. And he's going to be, Mahomes shouldn't even get on the plane. can't wait. So good. Oh, my God. We love you, Mark. All right, that's all we got. Subway Sports Talk. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review on your podcast app. Hit us on social at Subway Sports Talk, on Twitter, X, on Instagram, on TikTok. We'll talk to you on social. We'll talk to you later in the week with picks. Cody O'Connor, as always, I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Have a good one, everybody. Cheers.